Don't move, don't talk, out of time. Don't think, don't worry, everything's just fine. Just fine. Don't grab, don't clutch, don't hope for too much. Don't breathe, don't achieve or grieve without leave. Don't check, just balance on the fence. Don't answer, don't ask, don't try and make sense. Don't whisper, don't talk, don't run. If you can walk, don't cheat, can't feed. Don't miss the one beat. Don't travel by train, don't eat, don't spill. Don't piss in the drink, don't make a will. Don't fill out any forms, don't compensate. Don't cower, don't crawl, don't come round late. Don't hover at the gate. Don't take it on board, don't fall on your sword. Just play another chord. If you feel you're getting bored, I feel numb. I feel numb. Too much is not enough. Don't change your brand, don't listen to the band. Don't gape, don't ache, don't change your shape. Have another grape. I'm super connected. You can have my soul for free. I'm super connected. So you can send it back to me. Don't bleed, don't bridle, don't shackle, don't grind, don't curve, don't swerve. Lie, die, serve. Realize, realize, polarize, chance, dance, dismiss, apologize.
Too much is not enough.
Don't spy, don't lie, don't try, imply, detain, explain, start again.
I feel love.
Don't try, don't coach, don't cling, don't hoax, don't freak, peek, don't bleed, don't speak. Don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest.
I feel love.
Don't project, don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest.
I feel love.
Don't struggle, don't jump, don't call, don't eat, don't wish, don't fish.
I feel
don't
love.
Teach, don't reach.
Too much is not enough.
Don't bother, don't break, don't fence, don't steal, don't pass, don't stress, don't try, don't
love.
Suffer, don't run, don't fantasize, don't rise, don't lie.
I feel numb.
Don't project, don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest.
I feel numb.
Don't project, don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest.
I feel numb.
Don't project, don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest.
I feel numb.
Don't project, don't connect, protect, don't expect, suggest. Project, don't connect. Too much is not enough.
I feel numb.
iTunes Radio reminds you, Strange Brews, the show of your choice.
Hello and welcome again to The Strange Brew. My name's Jason Barnard and that was Tim Arnold with Sarah Kershaw. And their reimagining of the U2 classic Numb. And that's because I've got Tim here today on The Strange Brew to talk about his new version of the U2 song. And we've also got previous Strange Brew guest, Kevin Godley, formerly of Godley and Cream and 10cc, to talk about that song in the context of making the video for U2's Numb. And throughout this, we'll be talking about the concept behind the nature of technology today and the impact it has on music, art, and the world around us. So let's hear my chat with Tim Arnold and Kevin Godley.
So Tim, we've just seen the premiere of your version of Numb, the U2 track, and then obviously the video of that was critical, and that's one of the reasons why we've got Kevin here. Do you want to sort of take us through that reimagining and also how that links in with your new album as well?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of different reasons why I did a reboot of Numb by U2. Obviously, I've loved the band and I loved that album that came out, I think, in 93. I was 18 at the time. And I remember seeing Numb on, would have been, I don't know, maybe Top of the Pops or something like that. And as an 18-year-old, sort of between the end of A-levels and going to art school, that was a kind of wow moment. And I didn't know, I didn't put that together at the time. You know, there wasn't Google or anything. So I'd also been exposed to Kevin's work, video work in the 80s as a kid with Cry. But I didn't know this was, had been put together by the same artist. So I think probably 3 weeks ago, and this has come together very quickly, wasn't planned or anything. It's a bit of instant creativity on my part. I was listening to Zooropa and the track came on and I just heard it very differently since I released Super Connected. And I think when I heard The Edge's mantra about don't project, don't connect, just protect, it suddenly felt very now and very relevant. And that coupled with another thought that I'd had for several years, which was I'd need to do more covers. But I can never find a cover song that I really, really relate to, you know, somebody else's song that I really feel, because I'm always quite absorbed by whatever album project I'm working on. And immediately I just thought that I feel like I might have done something like that. It's very similar to the Super Connected album in spirit. And of course, what Kevin did visually with the original video very much too, you know, us being presented with experiences that we're not in control of and things happening to us, you know. The whole thing took 7 days. So I recorded it on a Friday till Sunday, called Sarah, said, do you want to come and sing on this? She said, yes. And then I called Jonathan, who does all the violins on my records. Do you want to come record it? He said, yes. And then I called Brian and Simon, who act in the Super Connected film, and asked them if they'd like to come and do a video. And I asked Kate if she'd like to help create the video with me. And it just sort of came together. And then we shot the video all in a Sunday. And then I edited it for 4 or 5 days and then sent it to Kevin to see if it would pass the godly test.
Did it, Kevin?
Yeah, I did. I was at first when Tim told me about it, I thought, oh, what a strange thing to do. What a strange choice. But then it kind of clicked. How it made sense with the project, the larger scale, the bigger picture that Tim's been working on, and it seemed to be a very good fit. So it was interesting to see what he did. I mean, I think he did incredibly well. I mean, with the resources at your disposal and how long you actually took to think through it and find a way to express the same thing, but today was a job well done. I remember when we did the original, it was a sort of meeting. I didn't go to them with this specific idea. I met the band over dinner. I think it was in Berlin. And we threw loads of ideas around the table. And with the producer standing by with the notebook, okay, I want some girls' seats. We want to, this bloke to come in and And he had to then rush off and make all that happen for like in 2 days' time or something ridiculous. The idea driving it was pretty much the same as the idea that Tim picked up on it. But in my version, this is more like, rather than the audience watching this guy gradually fading, as it were, and not responding to anything, this was almost like the screen's point of view of what was happening to him and being influenced by what the screen was doing to him, or the indications of what happens when a screen does something to somebody. And it's as true today as it was then, if not more so.
Tim, that's something that you seem to have tapped into. You've recognised the theme of Numb, the song and the video, but it seems to be even more resonant with the advancement of technology now, which then again links up towards some of the themes in your album.
Yeah, I've always written about desensitization, I think, in songs, even with my first band, Jocasta, in the 90s. There were a couple of songs on our album, which, you know, I was being influenced by tracks like Numb at that time, and I was 18. And I think back then it was more to do with, I guess, newspapers. I've got a lot of songs, I think, from my early songs are about the rubbish that was being written in newspapers and that was keeping us from really communicating with each other in a humane way. And it was newspapers that were dividing us. That was in the 90s. So, of course, Super Connectors isn't really that different for me as a writer. It's just actually how that energy that comes out of the media and now social media that can divide us is just much more powerful and much more sophisticated. I said to Kevin last week, maybe I should have called this not I Feel Numb. I should have been singing, I Am Numb. That's it. They've numbed us.
Yeah.
I think then it was such a social comment on I Feel Numb. You know, it's so really clear from what The Edge had written. It was, this is making me feel numb. When I look at how we all engage with our phones and any screens now, we are numb because it's really hard to truly feel anything anymore. So it's an interesting one. You know, I have goodies and baddies in my narrative. I don't think it's just coincidental anymore.
What do you think, Kevin?
I suppose, you know, that the advance of technology started a long, long time ago. I think the thing that worries me and has worried me and sort of in the background of things is this sort of semi-dormant sense that if we don't continue to do fully what automation and artificial intelligence promises it will do for us, if we don't continue to use authentic intelligence, then we may forget how to do things, particularly in the sphere of the arts. I mean, Tim and I were talking today, I think, I've forgotten how to write with a pen. You know, if I pick up a pen and start to write, it looks like gibberish because I haven't actually written on paper for many years. I've spent the interim time tapping on a computer keyboard, and I can write like that, but I can no longer write. And it worries me that if we lose touch with the process of creating things, if all we're really doing is briefing a machine to do something for us, we lose a major part of the experience of creativity, and that is the God-given mistake. The God-given mistake are things that happen on the way from point A to point Z that happen that you don't want to happen, but give you an experience that tells you the process is important because it may take you in a better direction. It may make you learn something that informs what you end up creating. And if you don't have that experience, then something is lost. I remember the first twinkle of doubt, even though I sort of jumped on it and enjoyed it, was the Linn drum machine, where it seemed the sort of pointless idea of synthesizing something that already existed and actually was rather good, was a set of drums. Now I could press buttons and sound like a set of drums. And I was like, why would you want to do that? And of course, at the time, it worked because I was working in a small recording studio that couldn't fit a drum kit in. So it made some kind of warped sense, but you become addicted to that convenience. Again, we were talking about things I've noticed, musical plugins and new devices, and the way they are advertised online is always about how quickly you can do something and how conveniently it fits into your lifestyle. And you don't have to spend forever creating something. You can kind of squeeze it in your day of much more important things. It's never about making what you're trying to accomplish better. I just think we're losing something in brushing past the process, the natural process of making things. You know, soon you'll be able to tell something to make a sculpture for you, but you won't be able to get your hands on the clay. And I think that's a vital part of the experience.
It's already happening in video form, isn't it?
Yeah.
The advancements that came out in the last month where you can put a few prompt words in and you can get a 1-minute film.
Well, it happened in filmmaking. It happened as soon as video editing arrived.
and took over from film editing. Film editing, you actually handled the film. And the handling of the film was slowly removed until you were pulling levers and pressing buttons, putting a cut together or a mix together. That suited me fine. That was the place where it really worked for me as a visual artist. But now if all you have to do is prompt something to create, I want James Dean in this. Can I have James Dean, please? Yeah, okay. Eventually you'll be able to have anything and do anything without actually doing anything at all, because it will be done for you. You have to learn how to brief something. And as I said, it's extraordinary. And I guess we'll have to learn to live with that, and it'll become a specialist art in its own right, or a specialist skill. But people will have forgotten how to actually do something themselves, and I think that'll make people vulnerable in the end.
Tim, do you think, whether it's art or even things like social media, for me, it's the unintended consequences, sometimes the polar opposite to what the objective is. So with social media, the vision was about connecting people together and linking them up. But actually what it's done is divide.
Yes. I mean, it's the good intentions thing, isn't it? It's paved with a lot of horrible tweets. That's kind of where the super connected idea came from originally, with in a satirical, tongue-in-cheek kind of way, because it's companies like Facebook, obviously, that were, their slogans were saying, you know, we connect people, that's what we do. And yet what my experience of Facebook back in 2016 was that anything I wanted to have communication about with people that I was connected to in real life was impossible to do on Facebook. You could, you know, unless there was, you know, interruptions and adverts and all that sort of decontextualization of what connection with another human being actually is. Not to make it all negative, I think the internet in general was a democratization. I think it's great to awaken the artist that does exist in some way, shape, or form in every human being. I think that's really important. But I don't think it's important doing it with just apps and the promise that technology can do, because in my experience, it happens with mentorship, and it happens with being around people like I'm, you know, working with Kevin and learning stuff that somebody who's done it all first before me and knows a lot more. I'm getting to understand it from a human perspective. Tensions with technology in the internet, social media are fantastic. But again, it will always come down to the fact that it's being controlled and steered by power, money, and maybe greed by very, very select few organizations on the planet. I think we're on the cusp of seeing that being challenged now. I mean, it was only last week that the organization, which is called Smartphone Free Childhood, just kind of rocketed into, you know, to a viral campaign. I wrote Super Connected about my generation, I suppose, and teenagers at the moment. I mean, it's centered around a 16-year-old. But they're concerned about 12-year-olds who've got phone addiction.
I've got a phone addiction.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And so I think there is a case with all exciting developments. I think Edward Snowden said it, didn't he? It's like, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should.
Stop with the sound. Don't let it follow. Let it. Let it lead. Don't let it follow. Let it. Stop with the sound. Committed and speechless, viewing time has recommenced. What's the difference? Useless feelings we don't fight against. Trauma, trauma, lost the signal. Follow. My eyes are starving, man. Remember the promise. Follow. And the song from the
ice cream van. Here it comes, twinkling down the road where you were born. Here it comes, lost in an image. Stop with the sound. Lost in an image. Stop with the sound. You'd like to have wide awake on jelly, could be sleeping in your own dreamland. Cliche, cliche, a brick wall, X-rated and undebated. Focus, focus, don't miss the call. Greedy guts get saturated. Here it comes.
Commenced. Start with the sound.
Lost in an image. Stop with the sound. Lost in an image. Stop with the sound. Lost in an image.
What's your take on it, Kevin? Because you've been consistently at the front of technology throughout your whole career. So you've been pushing the boundaries of much of that.
Yeah, I mean, I respond to technology. If there's a problem I need to solve, or I'm thinking in a particular direction and a piece of technology comes along that I think will be useful to help me solve a problem, it might be a sound problem or a musical problem or some creative problem, then I will try it. My problem at the moment is technology itself, and I can't find any technology to get rid of that as yet. I'm very aware of barriers that are cropping up to allow me to even get online these days. It's become harder to check a bank statement than it ever was, there's now something called double authentication and stuff like that. And, you know, even things like cookies and signing in and passwords and all that stuff get in the way of what used to be a quite an interesting experience. I used to be able to Google something up, ask Google a question, and get a reasonable answer. Now what happens is the first thing that I see is a list of where I can buy something. There are these things, and I think more and more people are noticing these things that get in the way of what used to be a relatively clean experience. Tap in a question, ask for some information about it, and then you have a choice of places to go and look at to give you that information. And there are still things up there, and they're not necessarily captioned as being so, but they're from like 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And you think they're current because they don't say they're not. You know, it's become a little bit of a landfill out there, which I find a little bit unnerving.
Tim, what about the power of the big corporations? Because I know you had a bit of a to-do with Apple in relation to Super Connected.
The commercial song on the record, A Commercial Break, that was a joke that was sort of like, well, music is interrupted constantly these days by adverts. A great album like Dark Side of the Moon could easily be decontextualized from its journey if you listen to it on a certain streaming platform, because it's ads revenue based, and you're going to get straight after Great Gig in the Sky some really inappropriate advert. I just thought it was insane. And so I thought, well, I can't combat this, but I could make a joke about it. So I put a track in the middle of Super Connected as an advert. It's my advert, though. And it was an advert for a fake product. I think also the fact that Stephen Fry did the voiceover probably drew attention to it. I think if I'd have done the voiceover, perhaps it might have gone unnoticed. But I'd made this product called an iHead. It was based on years of listening to people say, God, everybody's got phones stuck to their heads these days. And I just sketched what that might look like if it was deliberate. And that became the iHead, you know, with these three iPhones, which was based on some fictional headset that would make you like feel like the person you always wanted to be. So it's just a part of the story of the album, you know.
I want one.
Get you one, Kev, definitely.
Okay.
When I was putting it out to the distributors, they just wouldn't allow it on any of the streaming platforms because they said at first, this will confuse the algorithms on Spotify because they'll think it's an advert and it's not an advert. I said, well, no, it's not. And then they said, but it's very convincing as an advert, so we can't misguide, mislead customers. And oh, my God, it went on for months, and I kind of just gave up. And they said, if you take the track off the album, it's fine. And of course, it would be like taking a track off out of a musical because there's a narrative to the album.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. But then when I was blessed with some good reviews and some attention around the record, I just thought, this is crazy. It's not on Apple. And so I went back and said, look, you've got to put it on Apple. And they said, they're not going to budge. Thought, I'm, you know, a mature artist. That's my 26th album. I know how to take this on. That's really important for young musicians to know they can offend people, you know, kick up a fuss about something that's happening in our society. And I suddenly realized that's not going to be allowed if I had been 25 years younger. Yeah, I wrote a letter to Apple and published it and then asked a lot of influential figures if they'd sign the letter with me. Kevin was, I think, the first person to sign the letter. Because it wasn't just I want my album the way I want it. It was, this is about artistic expression. And it's the same thing as why Kevin and I met to begin with, Soho, and what that represents, and an ability for anybody, right or wrong, to, as long as it's not harming anybody else, to express what they want to express artistically. I think it was the beginning of July, and it went public on my birthday, on the Monday, on the 3rd of July. By the end of the week, Apple had put it on Apple Music without very much explanation, which just made me think, well, clearly public people power works.
Mm.
But then, of course, we also found out that they just announced their own headset. And it isn't called an iHead, it's called a Vision Pro. So there was some articles in the tech press saying, was I going to get sued by Apple for making a spoof of their newly announced Vision Pro headset? And, of course, the answer was no, they can't sue me because I designed my spoof headset 5 years before they announced theirs. But going back to this more serious point about what's happening with tech and all that is that music is the most precious, intangible force and energy for good in the world. And streaming services, including Apple Music, and there's some good people that work there, but all the streaming services are missing something that you cannot capture music and put it in a box and give it a monthly price. Not all the music in the world. It destroys young people's experience of valuing something. Iggy Pop talked about this on the John Peel lecture. You know, when you buy somebody's music, if it's going to run out, it means something really important. You've got the last one at the store. All of those aspects have been removed and replaced by it's convenient. It's in your phone. Everything's in your phone. You just pay us. And you know, it's not called music anymore. It's called music, the prefix of the company that's providing it to you.
Don't you hate it when commercials interrupt your playlist? We do too. So we'll get you right back to listening after this special message from Picture Sounds.
Are you getting everything you expect from sound? Is music just not touching your imagination the way it used to? In the United States alone, over 150 million people suffer with SID, sonic imagination deficit. We hear sounds, but our minds are closed to the opportunities they once offered. In Homer's Odyssey, Aeolus, the Greek god of the winds, provided Odysseus with music that touched the hearts and imaginations of everyone. The sound changed people's lives. Until one day, the music simply stopped. But the good news is, we've created something new to help you enjoy sound once again, just like old Odysseus. We've achieved this by allowing you to experience sound through that other sense that still works. Looking, watching, viewing. Yes, our oral imagination may have become infertile, but we've gone one better than imagination. We've created the iHead, a portal into a new world that reclaims and revives the enriching power of sound. To qualify for a free iHead, pop into your nearest store, try one on for size, and 21 days later, we'll send you your very own iHead. Visit us today. Picture Sounds. Terms and conditions apply.
Everything is content now, isn't it? Content. That rather anonymous word that can describe anything. Just to pick on what you were saying earlier about the way that algorithms make decisions for you within a particular program. The composer that I've been working with recently put a film up, and it was an anti-Nazi film, part of a documentary. And it was showing people marching with swastikas. And it was taken down because it showed swastikas. It was irrelevant that it was a documentary piece about Nazism. That was irrelevant. What was important was it was showing an image that was not allowed to be seen anymore. Therefore, a point that needed that image to make its point could not be seen, which is insane, is it not?
Yeah, it's a tricky area, that, but I do feel that forgetting what happened in history isn't helpful when we're moving into the future.
No, it's not. It makes it flabby. It makes it, the point was to show something evil had happened, but that wasn't allowed to be seen because, I have no idea why, because the image is offensive. Because, of course, it's offensive, but we have to show it you to say what it was. And so you know what it was, so you know why it was offensive and what the image was. But that could not be done, which is crazy. That was an algorithm that spots these things.
Kevin, I assume back in the 70s and 80s, it was often record labels potentially censoring things. Was that the case, whether it was in, you know, when you were making music or music videos?
Just trying to remember. It happened once, as I recall. Musically, we wrote a song that wasn't a hit record, 10cc, called The Worst Band in the World. And we used the word shit in it. And we don't give a shit or something. We had to remove it. We had to change something. Or when we actually mime to it on Top of the Pops or whatever show it was, we had to say something like, well, we don't give a bit or something like that. And it reminds me of The Doors appearing on some American chat show and agreeing to do that in a live performance. I think it was a song, and I lied something about getting high. And Jim Morrison said he'd do it and then ignored them completely and sang the original line. And they were never allowed back on the show again. But nice one, Jim. I mean, it's this assumption that people will do what you want them to do just because they want that extra bit of exposure. And not everybody's going to buy into that. Not everybody does. I hate that. And I imagine you do too, Tim.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I've kind of consistently in my musical journey made decisions that quite a lot of my contemporaries have said,
you're insane.
What are you doing that for? You know, and I think one of them was making an album that was holding up, criticizing and calling out all the biggest tech companies in the world and having to use them to advertise the album.
Death wish. The words death wish come into.
Yeah, I've had a death wish. I really relate to what you saying that some people just fall for something because they want some exposure. And that's what I've not done ever. And I don't, and I've lost a lot of exposure, I think, because of it. But not everybody wants to make music that is just vying for everyone's attention. It's vying for the people that you're making it for and yourself. So, but that's kind of going, I think, a little bit. And certainly because I mentor young musicians and it's challenging for them not to want to market themselves because it's sort of part of the training now. Now that comes with create all the content and advertise and measure the metrics. And, you know, this kind of language is kind of de rigueur by the time you're 15 or 16.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean,
it's a pressure, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know at LIPA, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, they have music courses, they're composition courses, but they also have management courses and music business courses. Because I think it's true to say that if you are a working musician in popular music, it is important that you know how the business side works. As opposed to us artists back in the day, just, fuck that, man, let's roll a spliff and make some sounds. That's not very sensible these days because that is one of the reasons why U2 are so popular. And so successful for so long. It was instilled on them by Paul McGuinness, their manager, that it would be important for you to understand how the music business functions and to understand every aspect of it and how to play it for your own benefit. Because if you don't, they will play you. So it's not a bad thing. It's just when that begins to rule the roost, when it becomes the defining factor about how you create. I think Bowie said something, is never make music for other people. Make it for yourself. Because if you start listening to what other people say, it will dilute what you make. And you will not, you will disappear into the, you'll disappear through the cracks.
How much direction did U2 give you in making the series of videos that you did with them?
U2 are very clever because there is a fifth member of U2, and that is U2, as opposed to each individual member of the band itself. And that fifth member, U2, has an instinctive understanding about what kind of things would position U2 where it needs to be positioned, but not just position, that sounds very cold, would illustrate what U2 are really about and what ideas wouldn't illustrate what U2 are about. So, and they were very sensitive to ideas in that respect. I was given quite a lot of leeway to come up with things, but there were many meetings where I was pitching ideas to them that I thought were really good ideas, but they just weren't right for them at the time. And the opposite happened where they were pitching ideas to me and I didn't see where they would go. But we always ended up at a place that worked, as far as I was concerned, and mostly as far as they were concerned. And there aren't many artists that are that deep into this medium. A lot of artists say, yeah, man, that's all right, let's do that, let's go for that, that's good. But occasionally there are a bunch of people who understand what a good video can do and would do and how it's appropriate for who they are and what they stand for. And they're one of those outfits.
Tim, the visuals are clearly critical to your forthcoming Super Connected tour. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I wrote the album 2015 to 2018. And when I finished recording everything and it got it to the stage that you do and you're kind of like, well, the next thing is releasing this. I'd already started writing stories for each song just in my head. And I just felt that it would be crazy to put this album out without a visual narrative. And it was at that time that I really noticed that most of my friends weren't listening to albums from beginning to end anymore, but they were watching Netflix series very attentively. So a bit of a perverse side of me thought, well, if I could make an hour-long drama that went with the album, then maybe I might find someone that would listen to the album from beginning to end. It's turned out not to be as drastic as that, actually. There's a lot of people that have listened to the whole album. But I went for it anyway and had explored lots of different routes for Super Connected, a lot of which Kevin became a huge part of helping me develop the spirit of what it was trying to do. I ended up making a feature-length silent movie that would accompany the film in chronological order. Tried before the pandemic to see how that might work on its own. I was about to start doing screenings. And then, of course, in March 2020, everything shut down. My partner's brother, who's the story supervisor on the film, Nick Alderton, said, you know what? I think screens are going to be a really important part of everyone's lives for the next couple of months. The film we might have to wait for people to get into the idea that there's something negative about screens. It's taken different iterations since the pandemic. I started doing stuff online with podcasts, Super Connected Conversations, interviewing people about the album subjects. Once the album came out last year and it was received quite affectionately by some of the publications that I'd not been written in before, including Your Good Self, I just thought, I want to show the film, and can I do it at the same time as the album? And so my partner, Kate, who's an actress in the film, helped me work out how we might do that. So first of all, she said, well, just get up and sing in front of the film. I got through 3 or 4 songs and she just kind of went, nah, that's not working. She said, I'm looking at you, you're doing a great performance. I feel like I'm at a gig, but there's a film going on. I can't look at the film and get the story, and I can't look at you and get what you're singing about. And she just had this, what I think is simple, but actually really novel idea of turning me into the audience. So she said, turn your back and sing at the film. And obviously, as a performer, it was like, people may have come to see me. She says, no, you're serving the film now. You're serving the story. Like the old-fashioned silent movies, somebody was there to play the organ to make the music for the film. After many weeks of workshopping, Kate directed me in a piece of theatre to sing both to characters in the film and also out to the audience at those moments where the audience would need some release and could let go of their attention with the film. And so all of that is the culmination of my own experiences with technology and then talking to Kevin about screen use, screen time. And ironically, this whole thing is happening on a screen with one human being. So it's like I'm singing about screens. I'm having to look at a screen and the phones have all been put away in pouches because, the phone-free shows that we're doing as well. So it's kind of metatastic. But what we learned afterwards when we did it at the Roundhouse last year, we've only done the show once, was that everybody just loved being in a room finally without their phones on afterwards. Just being in a room together and sharing space, which has been, that's I'm really looking forward to doing that at the same time as showing the film.
Would I be wrong in suggesting that we spoke at some point about doing this project as an installation?
Absolutely, yeah. This was, I think, around about 2018.
Yeah.
And I said to you at the time, Kevin, I'm frustrated. I don't want to put this album out as just another record because no one's listening to whole albums and it's kind of a story.
Yeah.
And that was your idea, which, to be honest, I still love to explore at some point. It was to make it an immersive experience where people going in and getting involved with the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember discussing that. It's the subject matter of ongoing.
Mm.
Ongoing. The good and the bad of it. Ongoing.
Quite a privilege, to be honest, because I always get a bit sad when you release an album and it's finished. But with this, it seems like it's kind of got married to the Super Connected.
Yeah. That's perfect. I didn't marry. Do you Super Connected? Say this composer.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Tim. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been absolutely fascinating to talk about Numb back in the early 90s and in the over 30 years later and the resonance it still has today, as well as the themes of Super Connected and your experiences in making music and film. So thank you very much.
Pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jason.
I'm super connected.
Thank you for listening to the Strange Brew podcast. If you do like the show, please consider a small donation to help keep the show archive online. It's 10 years since I started the podcast, and hosting fees are increasing over time. All your support keeps the show running and helps me get amazing guests. To support me, just go to thestrangebrew.co.uk, where you'll see a donate button on the homepage. Thank you very much. Plus, any reviews on your podcast services help to spread the word too. Thank you.